Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Hello and welcome to Tame the Monkey, the show where we talk all things mindset and provide stories and inspiration to help tame your monkey mind. I'm your host, Kelly Fryer, a mindset coach from the UK, changing mindsets and transforming lives. Mindset is the belief or beliefs you have about yourself and your most basic qualities. And it's a way of looking at something or a way of interpreting our lives and our world and its events. On this show, we explore tools and techniques, wisdom and inspiration, experiences and knowledge to help with mindset. Now, for me, the last couple of weeks have been great. Lots of great meetings and lots of times out. I attended the wedding of one of my friends in London on Easter Saturday, spent Easter Sunday and Easter Monday with my other half and family, walked, ate and watched films. Absolutely no work at all. This week, I've made choices to complete my get done list and take time out during the day to walk, and I feel so much better. And as we've touched on previous shows, time to recharge, reboost and re-energize ourselves is so important. And it's at times like this when we're at our most creative and our most innovative. Now, I remember when I was working in my corporate role and I would constantly be amazed that I would do my best thinking when I was at home in the shower in the mornings, whilst I was in the bathroom, or when I was on the train to and from work. And I discovered that these were the only times of day I was on my own and quiet enough to let my brain process information and thoughts properly. Over the years and with the research and studies I've undertaken, I have discovered more and more how important time out, relaxation and well-being actually are. And it really does work. Now, on today's show, we're going in a different direction than in other weeks, and we focus much more on business than on mindset. Now, I work with a lot of businesses in helping them with their growth and development, and I tend to focus on three core areas when looking at culture change, language, relationships, and behaviours. But in reality, I don't change businesses. I support the change of the people within them. I've met more and more business coaches over the last 6 months who talk about business change, business process, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't change a business without changing the people within. Now, I'm prepped with lots of water today and hope my voice survives. I've already delivered 2 webinars this afternoon, but I am determined to keep going. So once again, with energy lifted, adrenaline pumping and my voice intact, let's get on with the show. Now, if you want to contact the show today with any comments or questions, listeners in North America can call 646-716-7979, and listeners from the rest of the world can use the chat function by visiting the show page. The chat function is now open. With my guest today, we'll be exploring, among many other things, the impact of our workplace on our mindset and well-being, how employers and entrepreneurs can take steps to improve well-being at work, and why drama at work can be a showstopper. Now, my guest today is Nick Court from Cloud9 People. With over 20 years of experience in delivering great people solutions across a wide range of sectors, including retail, logistics, production, IT, call centers, and manufacturing, Nick has worked in all aspects of HR, whether it's managing the implementation of a new HR or payroll system, introducing fantastic new employee benefits, creating a job evaluation model, designing a bonus scheme, or making changes to your organization that requires an experienced HR generalist or specialist, Nick can help. Nick is a qualified mediator and has a desire to help remove drama, complexity, and issues, not just from the workplace, but to help people in general overcome obstacles that stop them from achieving their goals. Nick has a passion for employee engagement and in developing a great culture in the workplace. So remember, if you want to call in with any questions for Nick, the chat is open and listeners in North America can call 646-717979. So Nick, thank you for being with us today and welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Kelly.
Good.
It's all good. Everything okay with you?
Yes, brilliant. Thank you. Great to have you here. So, Nick, let's start by talking about your background and why you are where you are today. Tell us a little bit about that.
I don't think I have a plan to be where I am today. I went to art college, so I wanted to be an art teacher.
Okay.
So I did art history and sort of fine art, but I also had to fill another gap in, which I did computer programming. It's a bit unusual for my colleagues, but one of the things I discovered was that I could get pretty creative at developing solutions, and so I could turn that sort of art side into business as well. It's just something I love doing. So I also found I loved working with people. So working in HR seemed to be a natural step for me, I think. It's I seem to just flow through all of my career into one HR role into another.
Sometimes the flow of careers can be brilliant, can't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've done all sorts, you know, working in IT, doing payroll roles, employee relations, sort of travelling around the UK, or sort of being in the office, just sort of working on numbers or working with finance teams as well. It's, yeah, great, really interesting.
Fantastic. And I think from, and actually what you've just said about the creativity kind of sparked something with me, actually. But I think there's, a fundamental view out there that HR professionals are not necessarily creative. And I know that... I know that's always been quite a bugbear of mine because I myself am quite a creative person. So how do you kind of fit, you know, how do you harness that creativity to be able to help you, I suppose, do as much as you do within your role?
I think I tackle solutions. I tackle problems. I think all HR people do it. You know, it's HR people didn't get into the profession because they like doing policies or, you know, they got an affinity to paying people. They did it because they like people and they want to fix the things that are wrong in this world. And I just think that creativity, it manifests itself differently, and I think people struggle to see that you know, finding a great process and developing a great solution that makes it easy for people when they're at work to just come in and do their job is creativity.
Yeah, fantastic. So how do you, when you kind of look, obviously, you know, with the stuff that you said about art, when you look back over that now, are you happy with the decision that you made to go into HR?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think, yeah, I'd have liked to have been a teacher, you know, and I still sometimes think to myself, what a great role that would be, sort of inspiring a generation or lots and lots of different generations to greatness and to do their own creative stuff. But you know, just coming at it from a different place, it's no regrets.
Good. And do you find with some of the work that you do, particularly within your own business, potentially there's scope for you to, I don't know, get some creative spark flowing with the companies that you work with, or you know, kind of teach them different ways of looking at things?
Yeah, definitely. But it's a two-way street, and you know, I've gone to work for some great companies as well where you know, I've gone in and creativity just bounces off each other, you know, where you've got somebody who's, you know, who's got some great ideas, but what they just don't know is how to put that into a live environment, you know. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden I can step back from being the creative person and start looking at developing solutions and, you know, helping that person just, you know, continue their creativity.
Yeah. Do you find that, I suppose, more workplaces are open much more now to creativity and ideas?
Yeah, they are. I think it's essential. I think people are going to have to sort of learn that to develop in your role, you're going to have some ownership. And if you want to own something, you've got to be creative around how you deliver that. And that said, I do think, though, that, you know, it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. You can have somebody who's, you know, hugely creative, but you also need somebody who's going to back that up with, you know, delivering it through to making sure that you complete a project, you know. So I think that's something for everybody there.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So moving on then from Nick, what inspired you to set up your own business?
It's something I always wanted to do. I guess I looked at it a few years ago, and I actually set up my own business, but it just didn't take off. Uh-huh. I'm a great believer that time, you know, you got to get the timing right for these things, and you got to get your headspace right. And at the time, I was just backlogged with work in the corporate world. You know, I had a job that filled all of my time. I had a young family. And I think it was designed to fail at that time. So, you know, I think looking back and appreciating that now, you know, I've got my daughter's at university now, my son's 18, I'm in a different place, you know, and, you know, I've done it again. And I think what I've been lucky to do is set up work with some amazing people who work with me at Cloud9.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think they drive me forward as well. You know, they inspire me to do better stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to let them down either. So, you know, they're the things that they're great at have really helped me sort of make this a success.
Brilliant. And you've just, am I right in thinking you just kind of celebrated? Is it your first birthday with your business? Second birthday? Where are you?
Yeah, first birthday. March the 20th it was.
Yeah.
We haven't had a formal celebration yet.
You get that booked in.
Yeah, Jackie, who's one of my business partners, she keeps reminding me that we need to go out and celebrate that. So we're going to have a belated birthday party.
Brilliant. It's all about celebrating success. All about celebrating success. So I suppose for you, you said you'd obviously tried before and it hadn't necessarily worked out. This time around, I suppose to have gone past your first year milestone. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, it makes me feel proud. You know, it's good to know that if you put your mind to something, you can go out there and make it happen. You can just do it. It's testament as well to all the people that have supported me as well. It's not something I think I could have ever done on my own. You know, if I didn't have the support from my family, from my colleagues at Cloud9, from other great companies who've worked with me as well, I think it's a success because of sort of a broader network than just me making it a success.
And those relationships have been key by the sounds of it.
Yeah, definitely. I just think that I think building that network and I don't like to say making that network work for you, because if you're going to make the network work for you, you've got to pay back into that network as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for as much as you can take out, you need to put back in as well. I think there's this, I think there's this virtuous circle that needs to keep going when you build these networks. But yeah, definitely the network's been important.
Well, I suppose most relationships really, if, you know, kind of you do get out what you put in, don't you? It's that two-way communication, listening, sharing, all of those different bits and pieces, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't work if it's a one-way street.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Now, in your bio, Nick, it mentioned about drama at work. Give us a little bit of insight into that and how that can affect us in the workplace.
Oh, I hate drama. Not just drama at work. I don't like drama anywhere. I think drama drains energy. I think it saps people, and not just the people who are involved in, you know, the dramatic incident that happens at the time, but I think the onlookers, I think the people who are sort of outside the epicenter of that drama storm get sucked in. I think they, you know, they feel a bit quieter. They don't feel that they can speak in the office environment or wherever they are. I think drama just has a effect that sort of reaches out to people, and it damages stuff as it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. And you said that you're kind of a qualified mediator. You've got this desire to help remove drama. What do you think stems a lot of drama in the workplace? Is there a kind of a common theme as to where that comes from?
I think it's a couple of bits. So I think some people, and I think it's important to differentiate between somebody who is a little bit theatrical. Yeah, so someone who is naturally theatrical isn't necessarily dramatic. So they may flounce in the office. I do it. they may be a little outspoken, but that doesn't necessarily, that's not the drama I'm talking about. I'm talking about you know, drama that's, you know, stuff is going wrong. I think when people start on that route, I think personally it stems from a couple of things. So I think it stems from situations where people feel they can't influence the situation,
mm-hmm.
or they feel they can't accept the situation that they're in.
Right.
And I think when somebody is powerless to control something or to accept that it is what it is, I think then you get the seeds of drama.
And what do you think needs to kind of change, I suppose, either from an individual perspective or from a business perspective, to, I suppose, get people to that level of acceptance?
I think people need to slow down and recognize the way that they behave. So I think feedback is a great gift, and I think any company that doesn't have a format or a tool that allows people to openly give feedback or to give peer-to-peer feedback without it becoming another dramatic situation, without involving managers and everyone else, that, you know, you're comfortable with our environment to give feedback, you know, I think that's the start. And then I think people need to have that introspective view where they can sit back and say, well, okay, this is what's happening, this is how it's impacting other people, what do I need to do now? And just help them either accept a situation or to learn how they can start influencing people around them. I think it's training, I think it's learning, it's development, it's culture, it's all of those important things. And if you think about a great guy once taught me about an employee value proposition being four parts, you know, pay and benefits, culture and learning and development. And I think if that learning and development piece isn't there, people don't have the tools to do the job, not just the PCs and hardware. If they don't have the cognitive ability to do their job, then I think you've got an issue, and I think you need to help people over that.
Yeah, yeah. An interesting and I think very valid point. We got, you see lots of quotes out there. I think there's a very famous Richard Branson, where they, you know, if we train people and they leave, or what if we don't and they stay, or something? Along the lines of that? I think lots of organisations talk about learning and development and why it's important. From your experience, do you think all of them necessarily follow through with that?
I don't think they do. I think what people do is they think of learning and development as a transactional product. So they think it's, you know, I've got an employee who's going to drive a forklift truck, therefore learning and development is to train them to drive a forklift truck. And that's certainly not the case. That's just part of a broader learning and development package. Learning and development should be social. It should be something that you can take outside of your workplace, and you can have, you can take home to your family, you can take home to your friends. It's something that you can influence outside as well. And I think it's something that just helps you grow as an individual.
Mm-hmm. And create those transferable skills.
Yeah, absolutely. And people become better at work, and you know, I think one of the other impacts of drama at work is it introduces negativity into the workplace as well. So you end up with, you know, people think negatively of somebody. They don't feel that they would then help, and you end up being in this circle where, you know, people are saying, well, I'm not going to help that person because, you know, they introduce drama into every situation, and then you don't have the teamwork. And it doesn't work. And I think there's, we talked about quotes the other day, and I had one come to me, which was an interesting one. I think it was a Hindu quote, actually, which is, those that create their own drama deserve their own karma.
I like that one. Very good.
Yeah, but it's quite harsh as well, isn't it? You know, it's kind of like, yeah, it's, if you're causing drama, then, you know, something's going to come back.
I think I suppose, for me, with the work that I do and around, you know, the sort of mindset stuff, it is about just being more conscious and more aware of what it is that we're doing, the impact on others, but also the bigger impact on ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think mindset's really important, but I also think the ability to have somebody that you can go and speak to, a coach, a confidant, you know, whatever it is in your life, it's, you know, I wouldn't be able to do everything I do now without having somebody that I can just go and, you know, let off a bit of steam with, that I can, you know, I can talk to about anything, that's just going on in my life and get some different perspectives on it. It helps me put in, you know, if I feel, you know, if I feel the mist rising, you know, if I feel the monkey getting out of control, then, you know, someone else who can come along and just say, look, step back.
Yeah. And give you that level of perspective.
Yeah, that's it. And it stops you, slows you down, gives you the space and makes you think.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so listeners, remember, if you have any questions, comments or thoughts that you'd like to introduce to the show today, then listeners in North America can call 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. And our listeners in the rest of the world can use the chat function. Chat is now open. So if you do have any comments or questions for Nick, then do feel free to either call in or put them in the chat function and we'll get those answered for you later in the show. So Nick, coming back, you was sort of speaking a couple of minutes ago about feedback within organisations, and I suppose I'll mirror the question really that I had around learning and development. But do you think necessarily when businesses, organisations, teams, when they ask for feedback, there is a genuine want or need for them to receive it?
I think sometimes there's a risk that you put in a you put in feedback as part of your annual performance or your ongoing monthly performance review, so that you can demonstrate that I've asked for feedback and I've got feedback. And it can become almost a tick box exercise then, I think. I've certainly done it before where, you know, I will pick who I'm going to ask that feedback of, in the knowledge that I know that I've got to do it. So, you know, I'll make sure it's people who are going to give me the feedback that I want to hear. And I think that's a little bit different. I think, you know, what people need is good quantifiable feedback that they can work with.
Yeah, and I think you just kind of mentioned two words there, which I think, you know, good and quantifiable. I think sometimes, or certainly, you know, from my experience and with the work that I've done, I think sometimes when we say feedback, there is an automatic assumption that it has to be constructive or there has to be something negative about it. Whereas, you know, what's your view on that?
Yeah, I think I do think it's a gift. I remember the first time I ever got some feedback that, you know, made me stop in my tracks. It was actually a guy that worked at Tesco a long time ago, worked at the same time as me. And then I met him again working at Carlsberg. And gave me some feedback. I remember sitting there thinking, this is a bit tough. You know, this is a bit forthright. And I remember taking a little bit of offence at it, actually. But then I stopped and I thought, okay, hang on a minute. I need to go and sit down. What's this feedback about? And actually, it was good feedback. You know, it was good behavioural stuff. It was changes that I could make. It was stuff that I could actually turn around and deliver on. And it was someone who was actually just being honest with me. And I think sometimes that's what people are scared of about giving feedback, honesty.
You think it's the honesty that scares them?
Yeah, and it's, you know, sometimes absolutely you're going to get negative feedback. You know, but if you know everything is something you just need to turn around. Everything's a lesson, isn't it? So, you know, positive feedback reinforces, and negative feedback should stop and make you question stuff. And you'll absolutely get negative feedback from people who see the world in a negative way. So that's the way they would always give feedback.
Yeah, because that's more about them, isn't it?
Yeah, and sometimes you need to filter that out, and sometimes you need to, you know, either try and distill it down into what did they actually mean, or actually discard it sometimes. But if you're getting good, honest people giving you good, honest feedback, and some of that is negative, then it gives you something to work on.
Yeah. It's all about kind of, I suppose, that improvement and, again, taking us on that learning journey.
Yep, absolutely.
Brilliant. So, Nick, again, just kind of looking at your bio and the type of work that you do, we mentioned, I suppose, sort of well-being quite a lot there. Why is well-being at work so important?
You spend a third, if you take the 5 days that you work, or the 5 days that the majority of people are working, you know, and you take 24 hours in a day, you're working 8 hours a day if you're lucky. Yeah, and you sleep for 8 hours a night if you're lucky. and then you've got 8 hours left. And in that 8 hours, you've got to travel to work, see your family, go shopping, have your dinner, have your breakfast, and all the rest of the stuff that's going on. So for a third of your working life, you're in your workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, the impact of a negative well-being, of negative psychological well-being, of negative physical well-being or financial well-being, it has an impact not just on you but on all of your colleagues in the workplace as well. So I think people think too often that well-being is around helping people go to the gym. And it's not. It's absolutely not. It's part of it. It's it can be part of that program, but this is more it's more of a whole. It's more of a holistic approach to well-being that companies should be taking. And people are living longer now. So, certainly in the UK, there's a pensions issue that's looming. Not an issue, but pensions is looming, where we've got people previously were retiring at 55, 50 years mm-hmm. old. People are going to be working until they're 65 or 70. Now, if you're going to be working that long, you've got to have your health to do that. You've got to, if you want to retire earlier than that, then you've got to have your wealth. So financial well-being and physical well-being are absolutely vital for this.
Mm-hmm. And your mental well-being, I would imagine, as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think people forget as well. And something I hadn't thought about, and I had a meeting last week, and I was talking about this with a lady called Gail, and she said, well, actually, she thinks there's a fourth element, which is all about your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays to the culture of the company. So that third box, on an employee value proposition, the culture of the company. And she said it's all about how you feel when you get up in the morning. So you might have, financial, physical or mental well-being issues. Yeah, or you may not be in a great place, but how do you feel when you go into your workplace? How do they make you feel? Is it fun? Is it, forget what you're having for breakfast and forget whether you're going to the gym. Is it a great place to work? Do you work with great people? Are you feeding the soul? And I really like that. And I'd never really thought about it like that. I'd probably been quite black and white that it was, three things. And I'd almost pat myself on the back to remember to pick up the mental well-being part of it. But she's taking it a step further, and I think that's great, and I think this is something that's evolving all the time.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting view. I know for me, again, with sort of the work that I do and going in for organisations, and something that I picked up actually all the way throughout my corporate career, which I suppose is in some ways kind of connected to what you just said, but maybe what you've just said kind of looks at it from a much deeper level. But I think one quick gauge for me to assess the culture of an organisation or how bought in or engaged or, kind of part of that most employees is really about how they speak about their business. So do they speak about it as a third party, as though the company are doing this or, they are doing this? Or are they talking about it from the sense of we do this and we deliver, we do this, we do that, we do the other? And I think, from all of the years' work that I did, actually, if it was a we, you could tell how ingrained that person was to the organisation. The kind of, I suppose, for me, culture of an organisation, I've always kind of termed as the DNA of the business. But actually, if you're talking about it in the sense of a we, and you're talking about it in the sense of a they isn't really being bought in the same way, is it?
No, it's not. No, people need to be knitted into that infrastructure of the business. They need to feel that they're part of it. People always say things like, our people are our most important asset or, most important part of the business. And they say that, but they need to mean it. And I meet lots of people who still refer to employers that they worked for years and years ago as we. They've still bought into that brand. They still bought into that that element. And I think it goes back to, are you satisfied? Are you engaged? And I think we've had this conversation before, but it's, that engagement piece and that satisfaction piece go hand in hand when you're at work. And particularly if you're working for a brand or you're working for, a big well-known company, then, it's often a given that people do that, but it's quite tough to make sure that you get that balance right. You know, that yeah. people are your biggest ambassadors. So let's
Absolutely.
Not talk about people as assets and, you know, the value of them. When they leave work, what do they say? When they go home and talk to their families, what do they say?
Yeah, again, that's something one of my previous chief execs said. You know, what's the conversation that everybody's having at the pub when they go for a drink after work? And that's always really, really stuck with me.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And you know, you kind of want people to be proud of where they work. So, you know, if somebody says, you know, what do you do for a job? You don't want somebody hiding behind it or saying, oh, I work for, you know, but, you know, you want them to talk quite proud about it, you know, and you
yeah.
want, you know, I've certainly done it before where, you know, I've worked for a company and someone said, oh, you know, I had a bad experience with that company. And then, you know, I go out of my way to find out what that experience was, to try and fix it.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want people feeling like that.
No, good point. Very, very good point. And I think we need to. So, but I suppose on from that, do you think more employers should be doing more to look at that? I suppose that soul proposition, if you like, and more about to support the well-being of their employees.
Yeah, I think they absolutely should. I think it's, you know, it's recognizing that, you know, you've got to have. You're going to have different groups of employees, aren't you? So you're going to have some employees that are new to the business. You're going to have some employees that have been in the business for a long time. You've got to make sure that you're making people feel welcome, that you've got a well-being in place, that people think that actually that when companies are making decisions, they're making their decisions not just on a corporate fiscal approach, that they're making it with their people, you know, hearts and minds,
mm-hmm.
you know, as part of those decisions. You know, and I think it's tough, and it's a choice, though, isn't it? You know, the environment that an employer provides is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and every employer should sit there and say, what is the choice that we're going to make? And not every employer can afford.
Mm.
You know, they can't all be Google and Apple and, you know, have beanbags and fun slides and, you know, fake grass in the canteen. But, you know, they've got other stuff that they can do.
And what other things do you think they could do? Have you got any sort of hints and tips for doing things on little or no budget?
Well, I think the one thing you can control is you can control when and where people work and that flexibility that people have and people feeling comfortable when they come to work, confident when they come to work, that they can openly raise. It's that environment, it's that, you know, we are a family. We work together. You know, we may work in a rough environment, you know, maybe a bit cold, you know, or maybe a bit dirty, you know, that's this is a job we've got, but you know, it feels like family. You know, and you know, and again, something I was told a long time ago, families fall out. Yeah, but they never fall out for long.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's the strength of a family. So, you know, you make up, you carry on, you know, and if it doesn't feel like that, then you know, that's something people can do. You know, and just remembering what's important to people as well.
Yeah.
You know, and having that empathy. So people are going through different stages of their lives. You know, it's, you know, I've never missed a parents' evening.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. I've never not gone to a school play.
No, me neither. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, and, you know, but I shouldn't have to drive that myself. My employer should accept that as well. And that's all part of the environment that they provide. They should provide an area where I shouldn't have to push for that or ask for that. It's almost should be a given,
mm-hmm.
you know, as best as they can.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, totally agree with that one. Totally agree. Now, I don't know about kind of across the rest of the world, but there's lots of initiatives in the UK that the government are putting forward in place, such as the 1U and surveys from the Department of Health about things like incorporating walking into our daily lives. Do you think these are, you know, do you think they're helping people? Do you think they're complementing what businesses are already offering? What's your view on those?
I think it's good. I think it's different though. So when you're talking about government initiatives, you're looking at a macroscopic level. You know, you've lifted yourself right up, and you're now talking about a broad population, and it's difficult to measure, you know, numbers that big, because you end up with a distribution curve of too many people. And so I think it's good because it gets what the government do is they set the agenda for the country. So it does get businesses talking, it gets businesses interested, and it gives them something that they can get behind and stand behind as well. So I think from that purpose, it's really good that that's happening. I don't necessarily know if somebody isn't that inclined to walk to work or to walk while they're at work or anything. I don't think that these sort of schemes will necessarily have much traction with them. But I do think that if an employer gets behind it, you know, and has a, you know, it gives people things like standing desks. I'm seeing a lot of standing desks. I never thought I'd get to reach a point in my life where I'd say that, but I am seeing a lot of standing desks. You know, these desks which are adjustable. You can sit down, and you can stand up, and they lift up.
Yeah.
And you know, there's recognition now around these are the sort of things that companies can do to help. You know, it doesn't have to be all, you know, rah rah, let's all go for a run around the park, because you immediately switch off the people that can't go for a run around the park. But if you can do something, you know, something small like a, you know, a standing desk, it doesn't cost a lot more than a, you know, normal desk. Or if you can do something which is a bit more inclusive of everybody, then I think, yeah, it's great that the government sets that agenda and then businesses can follow and do and tailor it for themselves and their people.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. And I suppose moving on from that viewpoint, what do you think as entrepreneurs we should be doing to look after ourselves more?
Oh, blimey. yes, everything, everything I've just said.
Including yourself. Yeah, including
everything,
yourself.
Yeah, everything I've just said that I don't do. And I mean, I had it today, you know, all the best will in the world. You know, I've had a lovely Easter break, eaten lots of chocolate. And I said, you know, I'm going to have a bit of a detox, but, you know, failed to prepare. So, you know, ready to fail. And I turned up at work and, you know, they ran out of all the healthy food, you know, so I had a bit of a bit of an issue. So I do think that, you know, from an entrepreneurial point of view, you naturally are going to end up working strange hours. You know, you're going to find yourself doing a couple, you won't work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. You know, you're going to work when you need to work. And sometimes that can throw you out a little bit. That can get your calendar all mixed up. So I think it is important to do that. I think it's important just to reset your clock. A bit like you said earlier about, you know, taking the weekend out to not do work, spend time with the family, you know, eat at the normal times, go to sleep at the normal times. You know, I think that's absolutely what people need to remember to do. And otherwise time will get away.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can, time can run far too quickly away from us, can't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. Okay, so remember, if you have any questions for Nick, you can use the chat function, which is now open, if you are in anywhere in the world other than North America. Our North American listeners can call into the show on 646-716-7979. So that's 646-716-7979 for our listeners in North America. And for the rest of the world, you can use the chat function. Now, Nick, how do you think the mindset and well-being of employees in the UK differs to other parts of the world?
I don't want to be a cliche, but I think that we're a lot more rigid in the UK. I think because we've got a strong hierarchical class background, that I think sometimes that impacts it. And I think there's a big group of people who, if you talk to people about mindset, mindfulness, well-being, they're not switched on to it. You know, that's something for someone else. That's something for the middle class. That's something for you know mothers doing yoga at home while the husband's away at work. It's, you know, it's maxed back to the, you know, the 1960s, but it's this sort of old memory that we have in the UK. And I think because we land ourselves in the past a little bit, so that's the way we think sometimes. But it is changing, you know. And I think the, you know, the generation that's coming through now, you know, not baby boomers like me, but the what's the term? It's the term millennials, is it?
Oh, the different generation. We've got millennials coming through now. Yes. I'm a Gen Y.
Are you? Gosh.
I am. I'm Gen Y, yes.
Well, I don't know what I am. I'm not going to be.
Sorry. We had a bit of a blip with the sound there. I lost you ever so briefly, but we're back now. Okay. Sorry about that, listeners.
I think I was trying to work out what I was, but no, it's cool. But I think with the millennials guys coming through, I think there's change coming. You know, I think that, you know, people are demanding a lot more in terms of, you know, people wanting to be looked after.
Mm.
You know,
well,
and,
I think
and
what
people...
we've seen over recent years, haven't we, from the changes in generations, I think, as you said, probably from earlier generations, it was much more about kind of job for life. It was about security. It was about salary. I think what we are seeing now are employees, team members, business partners, you know, whatever kind of work we're in, but they're coming through with a very different viewpoint. It does seem to be about that work-life balance and that well-being and the values of the organisation.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that a lot of millennials will look at before they even start working. Now, you know, before they even start talking about what's the pay, they start talking about what's the culture, what's the package, what's the, you know, what else do I get? What are the benefits that I get from working for company X versus company Y? You know, so why should I work? Why should I work for you? What are the opportunities that you're going to give me?
Yeah.
You know, and I think particularly that, you know, we've got a generation that are coming through, not necessarily through the standard routes either. So we've got more and more people who are coming through on apprenticeship routes. We've got more and more people coming through direct from school into roles. And I think, you know, and then you've got the mix of the graduates as well coming in. And I think it's never been like this. You know, it's always been that, you know, the typical route is either you start at the bottom and work your way up if you come from school, or you come at middle management if you come as a graduate. And
yeah.
I think that's all changed now. And, you know, with that changing, I think, you know, I think everything else has changed as well. I think, you know, what people want from an employer is massively different.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. And we've obviously got the the UK, we've got the apprenticeship initiative coming in next April in full force, which will see apprentices really from, you know, call it sort of, I suppose, 16 up to, well, there's no age limit, you know, ultimately. So I think, again, that could see a very, very different mix of skills, abilities, ages, wants and needs coming through. And, I think we've got to do more to get employees prepped and ready for that.
Yeah, and I think I mean, how brilliant is that? How brilliant is it that you know, for companies, you know, who are looking out to the job market, that, you know, they've got, you know, all these people who want to come and work for them, and, you know, their ability to find different routes into employment, it is going to be great. And to bring someone in to nurture them, to teach them a skill, to train people on, you know, stuff that, you know, they're not centered around going to college, they're not centered around education, but to be able to bring someone in and just take them through to that next phase of their life, and accept that, you know, give it a couple of years and they're probably going to move on to their next employer, and you bring in your next apprentice, it's I think it's a great opportunity. I think we should put our arms around it.
I agree, and I think, you know, things such as a job for life have been out of the window for quite a while now, haven't they, with changes of the economy and, again, different generations coming through into the workplace.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, pensions has changed that a lot for people. You know, it was a real hook for staying into a employer would have been that defined benefit, final salary pension. You know, that's what I get. And, you know, with pensions changing, but, you know, they're pretty the same everywhere you go. And, you know, so it's no longer that, you know, company-centric benefit that people will come and stay for. So, you know, if you want people to work with you for a longer period of time, then you've got to do more for them. And you know, going back to well-being and, you know, the environment, I think that's, you know, it's a small part that people can do, but I think a really important part.
Yeah, totally agree. So what would you like to see more of for employers around sort of well-being, general well-being for employees?
I think it's that recognition of that it's something they need to do, and it's that going back to the, you know, the holistic approach, that recognizing that actually if somebody has financial issues at home, it may not be their employer's issue. you know, but has that person got the right frame of mind? Has that person got the right mental well-being?
It's bound to impact them at work, isn't it?
Well, exactly. And, you know, if you can offer financial education, if you can offer anything around that, you know, that's a transferable skill that people will take home with them. But, you know, if people are better with their own money, they're probably going to be better with your money too.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they start linking the connection between how they are at home and budgeting and planning and how they are at work, budgeting and planning.
Yeah.
You know, and kids today, it's in the curriculum. You know, financial education is part of the curriculum. So we're going to, you know, probably within the next 5 years, we're going to see that and there won't be kids then, but we're going to see young adults coming out of the education system into a workplace where they're used to having financial education. And, you know, when they come into a workplace environment and they don't have that, or they meet people who aren't at the same level as they are, I think it's going to feel strange for them. So I think it's that recognition and also the recognition of how it's actually good for an employer. So to be able to offer this, you know, suite of well-being packages, whatever it is, whatever it looks like, how actually you get dividends back as an employer, you know, through whether it's through loyalty or whether it's through productivity, whatever that is, you know, you're going to get that back.
Thank you. So once again, listeners, if you are in North America and you want to call in with any questions or comments, you can do so by calling 646-716-7979. And the chat function is open for those of the rest of you in the UK. Now, Nick, we're just moving into, I suppose, the final segments of our show, really, and a little bit more of a focus on you, I suppose. So I understand you're still in transition from a corporate role into, I suppose, sort of going head first, really, sort of feet first, immersing yourself completely into your business. How are you managing the two?
Long hours.
Okay.
But actually, you know, my employer that I'm exiting from, you know, has a great culture and, you know, are very supporting of what people want to do in their lives. You know, they recognize that actually, you know, the world's secular. You know, what comes around goes around. So, you know, one day I may be back. Who knows? One day, you know, they may need me. One day I may need them. So, you know, they're certainly not of the ilk that is, you know, if you want to do something, you've got to do it in secret and you've got to do it wholly, you know, leave to do it. So, you know, I've been really lucky, I think, that, you know, if I've needed time, if I've needed space, that they've been okay with that. And I think as well support from colleagues and you know and family as well. It is vital. So it's been hard to manage. It's been a good year, and you know, I sort of recognised early on that, you know, I'm not a one man band. It's not what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the other three people who joined Cloud9 to work with me sort of came in the last year, you know, and everyone's added to a different facet, and you know, it's just something that's good. Well, I think it's something that's good.
Brilliant. What advice would you give to anyone managing that same transition?
I think it's probably making sure you take that time for yourself. So it's really hard to manage your diary when you're doing something like this, because you've got so many different employers, you know, different stakeholders, you've got different stuff to do, you've got to get the, you know, your bank sorted out, your accountant sorted out, so no one else is going to manage your diary, so you've got to do it, and then you've got to remember to put that grey time in for thinking, you know, you've got to remember to take that time out to speak to your friends, to, you know, go and have something decent to eat. And remember not to lose sight of the values. And, you know, we keep checking ourselves. You know, all four of us keep checking ourselves, really, which is, you know, what's the company we want to be? And is what we're doing what that company would be doing? And if the answer is no, we just stop. We just stop and we say, right, okay, we need to do this differently. You know, and I think that's really important. I think you've got to not lose sight of what your goals are, but also what's your moral compass, where's it pointing, and how do you make sure that's always pointing in the right direction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're key points. Do you think you're obviously talking to a lot of businesses, and even with the team that you've got, do you find that's quite easy to do, or do you sometimes find that quite challenging?
I think it's a mix. Everyone works at a different pace. I think that's the other thing as well. I think that it's probably the most challenging thing. So you can go and work for a client customer who, you know, is pacey and punchy and they want to get stuff done. And then all of a sudden you turn around and you've got to do a piece of work with somebody who doesn't have that same approach. And they're a lot more relaxed. And you've got to tailor your style. In the morning you could be working for the fast, pacey, punchy client. And in the afternoon you could be working for the relaxed and chilled out client. You know, and you've got to tailor your own speed to that as well. So it is tough. It's easier. It's easier with four of us because we can get that balance right.
Yeah, brilliant. And who or what would you say has been the biggest influence on your life so far?
I think it's a tough one. I don't want to be corny and say generally it's the family.
Be as corny as you like.
But I think it is. You know, I think it's, you know, it's the whole family. I'm lucky to have some characters who sort of support me, keep me on the straight and narrow, remind me when I'm drifting the wrong way. But you know, it's purpose as well as inspiration, I guess. So, you know, it's seeing my daughter at university doing the things that she wants to do, you know, living a life and, you know, carrying on is quite inspirational. Shell, my other half, you know, she sort of supports the whole family. She's the sort of keystone to everything. My son Lewis, you know, he's at college. He just cracks on, just passes driving tests, you know, and everyone's different, you know, and I guess my mum as well, you know, has probably been a major influence in my life. So certainly growing up, it was all around, I had freedom. So, you know, and that was the thing I probably always thank my mum for, is the freedom to make mistakes and, you know, learn from them. So,
brilliant.
You know, I was never stopped from falling over. But someone was always there to pick me up.
Great. Well done, Mum.
Yes, definitely.
Brilliant. And what do you think has been your biggest success?
It's probably doing everything I have done and keeping that balance. If I'm honest, it's not a financial success. It's not a material success. It's just being able to have done this and not lost anything, so I've not sacrificed anything on the way.
Yeah,
you know, so I think that's probably the biggest success. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, brilliant. And where would you say you see yourself in 5 years' time?
I don't have a clue. I'm not very good at looking that far forward, if I'm honest. I'm at the dentist on Thursday.
Hope that goes well.
I've got a coffee with a great person on Wednesday morning. After that, it's probably all a bit of a blur.
Okay. You just take things as they come.
Yeah, I'm terrible at that. And, you know, if that's an interview question as well, I just can't. I like to have a bit of flow in my life.
I think, you know, I think, again, as you said, everybody's different. And I think sometimes a lot of people feel they have to provide an answer rather than just saying, actually, I have absolutely no idea. I just want to play it by ear.
Yeah.
So, I think good on you for saying I don't know.
Good. Thank you.
Good on you. Now, I asked you, I suppose, what would you say your biggest success is, but how do you describe success?
I think it's a tough one. I think success isn't necessarily the opposite of failure. And I think before we talked about stuff being lessons, you know, you need to take away lessons. So I think, you know, you can feel something's a failure today, but when you look back, when you have sort of that retrospective look back, you feel completely different about that failure that you felt at the time. The thing that smarted and, you know, brought you a little bit of pain all of a sudden became, you know, just another life lesson. So, you know, I'd probably say that, you know, success, it's something that happened in the past. It's, you know, it's something that you have to look back on. And I think when you look back, if it feels good, you know, it looks right, it probably makes you proud, makes other people proud, then it's probably a success.
Brilliant. Thank you. And what would you say your top tips for creating the right mindset and attitude are?
Probably goes back to time management. So I would say you need to own your diary, make space for thinking, make space for spending time with people that are important. I think this sort of human interaction that people have got to do is absolutely right. Get that, you know, to get your mindset right, to have that person that, you know, you can talk to, you can say anything to. You know, and you can drop them a text, you can message them on WhatsApp, you know, and, you know, typically they're going to be there for you and they're going to keep you on the straight and narrow. I think those people are vital in your life, and you can't ever switch those people off.
Brilliant. So we all need some of those people in our lives.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And other than mindset, Nick, what tips do you have that listeners can use to help them move forwards in their lives?
I think positive attitude, you know, it'll take you further than an aggressive one. And I think the difference is, I think the bit that, again, it's about perspective. I think an aggressive attitude will probably take you places quicker. And I think a positive attitude may take you longer to get there, but you'll probably go further with it, and you'll get there with more friends. And or certainly more people who are likely to support and back you up. And, you know, I guess it's, you know, headspace. I can't say enough. Have space in your head for what you want to do. You know,
brilliant.
If you've got noise, if you've got stuff going on, you can't evaluate where you're at. So you need to remove the noise, headspace.
Yeah.
Move on.
Brilliant. Thank you. So Nick, just to close off, how can listeners contact you if they want to find more about the work that you do?
They can drop me an email. So it's nick@cloud9people.co.uk. I'm on Twitter. It's Scruffy Nick. It's Scruffy _Nick. I'm quite receptive to people adding me on LinkedIn if they want to. So any of those, just drop me a note and I'll always come back to people and help out. You know, I like having conversations.
Brilliant. So if anybody wants to have a conversation with Nick, you can get hold of him through LinkedIn, Twitter, or on his email. Nick, thank you so much. A great insight. Thank you for sharing it with me and our listeners today. Thank you very, very much for being on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. So my next show is on Monday, the 18th of April, and I'll be talking to Jodie Swingler, a sound therapist from the UK, now residing in Ibiza, who uses sound as a form of healing. Jodie will be speaking to me about the power of sound on our mental and emotional well-being, as well as sharing some of her incredible story with us. You can hear this show at 6 p.m. GMT on Monday, the 21st of March. If any listeners would like to appear on any of my future shows, you can contact me via my website, www.kelly-fryer.com. Now, it's been a pleasure speaking with Nick this evening, and thank you to all of the listeners for tuning in today. As always, the replay will be available to download within the next 24 hours. I want to leave you with just some thoughts linked to Nick's insights today. Now, we all work, be it as part of a large company, partnerships, or in our own business. Relationships, behaviours and language are key in creating the right culture and ensuring we are happy with our work. To stop the drama, allow us to protect our own energy and ensure we and our companies consider well-being and the impact this can have on us, I would like you to encourage to slow down in order to move forward and take time out to recharge and refresh. Thanks ever so much for listening. Enjoy the rest of your day and I look forward to sharing more great guests and their stories with you again soon. Bye for now. Thank you.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.